Three, two, one.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of The Normal Show, brought to you by Revive. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how health brands can lead the way in health. I'm your co-host, Chris Wickline, Senior Vice President of Strategy at Revive, and I'm joined today by a couple of very special guests. Amy Strauss, SVP and practice lead for our payer provider practice at Revive. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so thrilled to have you with us today. And of course, the old standby, Ryan Coliani, Chief Communications Officer at Revive, is with us today as well. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, Chris. I need like some walk-up music or something, some intro music to signal that people should really pay attention when I'm here.
I think that is brilliant, because honestly, you've probably been on this podcast more than myself as a co-host, Ryan. You should be an honorary co-host. I'm thrilled to have you guys with us today. On this week's episode, we're going to be talking about how to navigate the chaos of healthcare. And it's continuing our series on that topic. And we're going to be diving into a conversation on the overall challenge that provider organizations are being blamed for the high cost of healthcare. It's a crisis we're terming the value attack. But before we dig into that, I would love for our audience to learn more about Amy. So Amy, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? You are a newer addition to Revive. We're super excited to have you with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much, Chris. So I come to Revive with maybe a non-traditional background for agencies, but I have about 15 years of experience in provider negotiations and contracting. So I am very well versed in the provider financial states and have been working through provider negotiations for my entire career. So I have seen kind of all of the escalation. I've seen a lot of the changes that have shifted from fee-for-service to value-based and back. So I am here to help our clients work through some of the negotiation tactics and strategies based on maybe my financial background.
We are so, so lucky to have you. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your work at Revive? What are you doing at Revive? What are you seeing in the landscape today in the work that you're doing on behalf of our clients?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's fair to say that many of our clients are really dealing with significant challenges related to their payer negotiations and contracting. We're feeling a really increased sense of urgency in this space from our clients, and there's clear disruption in everything related to payer and provider negotiation. We're also seeing a little bit more pushback than maybe we're used to from payers in the challenges reaching a tenable relationship, so an attainable arrangement. So I think it's what I would expect to see is even more escalation and perhaps significant more out-of-network time, which is scary from a patient perspective and access. One trend that I'm noting, and I'm curious to hear Ryan's thoughts on this too, we are seeing that provider organizations are being impacted in a variety of ways. So while we historically have seen payer negotiations and challenging dynamics with payers on the health system front, we're also seeing maybe our non-traditional provider organizations experiencing new challenges as well for the first time. So some of these organizations are, you know, smaller groups, PE-backed groups, maybe specialty care models, and they have historically maybe had very consistent arrangements with payers, and now they're challenged for the first time. So that's something that we're navigating together and working through and really creating a new landscape on. But I think, you know, the reality though is that these payer challenges are almost like the straw that broke the camel's back. I think these organizations are in such dire financial straits, and I know Ryan will talk more about this, but it's hugely challenging and scary to see.
Yeah, it's certainly, I'd say, it's the most challenging financial environment any of us have seen in our careers, any of our health system clients have seen in their careers. and it is being further exacerbated by further scrutiny and pressure on commercial reimbursement rates, as well as even in other payer rates. And we all know the challenges that our clients face and hospitals and health systems face with reimbursement rates from government payers. Getting a fair contract from a commercial payer is increasingly more challenging. We're seeing more and more systems go out of network. These are, essentially critical to the long-term viability of our hospital and health system clients. Why you're seeing service line reductions. It's why you're seeing facility closures in different communities. It's a real tough environment out there. And if things don't shift, things look radically different than they do today.
So Ryan, tell us a little bit more about how this is part of what Revive is called the value attack. I know you were on a few weeks ago. You talked a little bit about the value attack then. This is a different aspect of it that we're going to dive deeper on to say, to help our listeners think about how to approach these things. But explain the overall value attack again and where this fits.
Yeah, I mean, the value attack is something that, frankly, we noticed a couple years ago, and we really started paying attention 2017, 2018. And this was when you started to see things like CMS price transparency regulation proposals. You started seeing Kaiser start their kind of bill of the month feature in Kaiser Health News. You saw the RAND Corporation come out and put out their report that tried to compare commercial reimbursement rates to government payer rates and try to kind of show the gap as a reason why health system prices were too high. So that was kind of the beginning of it. We had a little bit of a lull in 2020 with the pandemic, naturally, but it was really short-lived, 6-9 months max. The admiration for hospitals and health systems pretty much ended when vaccines became fully available and we dealt with all the politicalization in healthcare. So it immediately went back to the challenges we were facing in 2017 and 2018. And frankly, it's at a significantly higher rate now. You have things like the Loan Institute report that came out a couple of months ago that were focused on comparing tax exempt status to charitable giving from hospitals and health systems. The idea is that every single piece of coverage that you read about nationally and even locally is largely focused on the cost of care and the blame being on hospitals and health systems for the high cost of care that exists in the United States. Nothing about the impact and the value that hospitals and health systems bring to the communities that they serve, to their patients, the economic impacts they have for states and regions, those types of things. It's all focused on dollars and cents, nothing about their mission as hospitals and health systems to provide great care. And I think it's particularly relevant in an environment like Amy and I have been talking about on the payer challenges that folks are facing, because when our clients, I said, are more increasingly likely to be in an out-of-network situation and hospitals and health systems are increasingly out-of-network and having to talk about that publicly, when all the general public has heard from are policymakers or influencers have been talking about how hospitals and health systems are only focused on the bottom line and are greedy, it makes it harder to win a public perception battle when you're in the middle of a negotiation with a payer. So I think they're connected pretty closely, and it presents some pretty unique challenges on, what are the solutions, both long-term but also short-term when you're in the middle of a negotiation with a payer.
Yeah. So, this has always been a tough discussion, right? I mean, payer contract negotiations have never been an easy thing, and it's taking a flavor that's really kind of challenging systems in ways that we've never seen before. So, Amy, you told us a little bit about some of the things that are happening today. Give us a sense again of, the magnitude of some of the things that you're seeing. And, how our health systems, how any provider really can start preparing for how they think what Ryan mentioned is both the short term as well as the long term.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think just to back up a little bit, what I'll say about health systems is that they are financially trying to scrap anything they can together to keep their doors open. So this is a real concern related to access for their patient population. So what we're doing is we are helping them to get that message out there from a from a financial standpoint. So understanding how hard they're working to maintain their workforce, all of the cost-cutting measures they're working through on, you know, for example, single vendor sourcing on supplies, and understanding cost containment and working through scheduling. So there are so many activities that are happening on the health system and the organization side that it's not even fair. We're reaching out to the public and saying, you know, look, we're just trying to do the best we can to continue to care for our patients the best way we can, while payers are raking in maximum profits. So from a go forward perspective, I would say that the best thing a provider organization can do is to be aware of their contract timelines and understand which contracts are coming up for negotiation and just getting ahead of that. I think that the tendency is to be really reactive in this situation and look at contracts on a 60-day coming up to term basis or coming up to renewal basis, when really what we can do is we can look at this 12 to 18 months out and say, okay, we have these three payer negotiations coming up in the next 12 to 18 months or even 2 years. Here's where we are internally. How do we tackle these and make sure that we are working through these conversations before they come to a head?
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about what that getting in front of it means. So part of it's planning and getting it on the table. What are the types of things that you should be thinking about, you know, 18 months out?
It's a great question. So I think a lot of these activities are going to be making sure that the general public knows what the health system is doing on a financial basis, quality-wise, why they are the choice provider within the community and why they can trust them for care. And that way they have maybe this track record of reputational success that they can keep coming back to. So if there is an upcoming negotiation, we have messaging in place that we can continue to pull from and support. And Ryan, I know that this blurs into a lot of the work that you do on the value attack side. So this is where I think we'll continue to see lots of synergies.
Yeah, I think there's the like you were saying, Chris, there's the kind of the longer term strategy and the short term strategy. So the short term strategy is kind of, how do we talk about the negotiation? What are the challenges that we're facing? But it's the longer term piece that isn't directly connected to a payer negotiation or to a merger or acquisition or to negative criticism from the New York Times on our billing practices, those types of things. The longer term piece is a reminder and a focus from an enterprise on articulating our value. That's the work that has to be done. And I think for most hospitals and health systems across the country over the last couple of years, they've really had limited opportunity to do that. They've been focused so specifically on navigating the pandemic. They've been focused on staffing challenges. They've been focused on operational challenges, those types of things. And they've really, from marketing and communications perspective, have really been focusing on the day-to-day. They haven't had an opportunity to step back and to think about longer-term reputation building and those types of things. And that's really presented the opportunity for others to really define what we stand for as an organization without our input. And that's why, you know, the majority of Americans are concerned about hospital and health system prices. You know, 9 out of 10 Americans in the 2022 midterm said that they wanted to vote for a candidate that would address healthcare prices. And they, you know, policymakers see it as a winning message. Media feel like they're enacting change when they focus on bad debt litigation and those types of things from a hospital or health system perspective. So we really need to spend the time and take the energy and the effort to play the longer game and better articulate our value in the communities that we serve. And that collectively, if more hospitals and health systems are focused on this, that helps tell a broader narrative and a broader national story. Because that's where we're really losing right now. The broader perception, again, is that we are focused on dollars and cents, and as not-for-profit health systems, we should be focused on our mission, which is what's happening every day, but we're just not talking about it.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit, when you see systems that do this really well, how does that start? Does it start at the top? You know, is it from the managed care folks? Is it, you know, how do you gain traction for the kind of the burning platform for this to be really a strategic focus of the organization? It's not just a managed care contracting issue. It's a much bigger issue for a system.
Yeah, I'll let Amy talk about the specific planning pieces that need to happen from a managed care perspective. I think from a broader reputational piece and a broader, better articulating our value piece, it has to start from the top. Leadership have to empower the teams that support them, whether it's marketing communications, whether it's government affairs, whether it's patient experience, like those types of things. to better tell that story. I'll be fully transparent. I don't think there's a lot of systems that are doing this well right now. There's not a lot of systems that are focusing on this. However, there are more and more systems that are focused on changing that. And so we're working with clients every single day about kind of what is our value narrative? What are we adding to communities? What are the four or five pillars that really tell that story? And then we work with them on thoughtful engagement platforms to better share that, whether that's in earned media, whether it's owned content, whether it's paid amplification, whether it's on social, whether it's direct hand-to-hand conversations with policymakers in influencer groups. So it's really about kind of developing that narrative and then figuring out where do we show up and show that message. And that's the work that's, I think in the last 12 months, a lot of our clients have really realized as hospital and health systems, they have to start doing that. And it's a broader piece. It's a long-term play. This isn't something that our clients and hospitals and health systems are going to change overnight. This is going to take years to shift. We're just as every single, national study or criticism kind of slowly deteriorates our reputation, we're going to have to slowly build that up through storytelling and through stories of our impact and focus on that. So that's the longer term play. I'll let Amy talk about how that may be relevant to the shorter term play when, we have a negotiation on the table and have to communicate that about that publicly.
And I think, Ryan, to your point, it's innate for providers to be much more reactive than proactive. So changing the script on this is going to be huge for them as they think ahead to what future state contracts look like. The way I would think about the immediacy and the acute issues is through game theory. So evaluating who will blink first and then coaching our providers on how to work through the negotiation, how to manage the conversations, how to go to market, when they should approach the patient population, and how to think through what that financial chess piece is. So we know that we are doing everything we can to skate by and provide the best care available to our patients, but we are hugely challenged by the threat of disruption. So negotiating that piece is the biggest challenge.
So what does it look like when you say, look, take a look 18 months out, look at everything that you've got coming, right? How do you, approach the different negotiations? And you mentioned game theory and different scenario planning. Who are the folks that are really doing this well? How do they kind of, and who do they involve? How do they approach that? The idea of game theory, where there's trade-offs. Of course, they're doing financial modeling, but tell us a little bit more about how they evaluate those trade-offs.
I think that's the problem, right? Most provider organizations are largely outmatched when they're battling a national payer with significant resources and a tremendous bank account. So they are local providers that are, they have one goal, and that's to provide the best care for their patients. This is not in their repertoire. So that's where they really need to maybe phone a friend and think through how they can come ahead of this and create a better negotiation strategy and financial arrangement with the payer, because that will just serve dividends to their bottom line. What's interesting about this is both payers and providers are intertwined and interdependent, but they have to act completely independently in their decision making. So that's when the who blinks first thought comes into play. So as this is happening, there's distraction on the provider side, which can maybe decrease the quality of care as patients are moved out of network. So they lose access to their network of providers. They lose access to the care that they trust. And this mitigation should be a goal of all provider networks and provider organizations. But why is it not for payers? How do we get that message out there that we are doing this because we have to? We have to do this to stay alive in the game.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. So just kind of really kind of looking out both for their patients and making sure they have some continuity. That responsibility really of, gaps in care are good for nobody, right?
Yeah. Disastrous.
Let me ask a question. This might this might date me a little bit, and I don't even know if it's this way today, but back in the day, I worked near the auto industry, and unions would, you know, pick one of the big three back in the day to target a negotiation with, right? And to really kind of use that as the foundation for the types of contracts that they were going to go after. What does it look like in a health system today? Do you really have to think very differently? I mean, of course, contracts with different payers are different, but do you have to approach them differently? Or is it a scenario where you say, hey, look, these are the kinds of things that we need to have across the board, and we're going to try and carve them out with every payer that we've got?
I think from my perspective, it's a combination of both. So every payer negotiation and contract is going to look a little bit different. I like to say when you've seen one, you've seen one. They all have different products embedded. They all have different stipulations. But there is a way to universally get ahead of all of the contracts and create a fairly standard strategic message that can be brought to market ahead of all contracts coming up for term or renegotiation. So I think it's really a combination of both in my mind. And Ryan, I'm interested in your thoughts as well.
Yeah, I think the sequencing is really tricky, particularly for our clients. I think, you know, to your question a couple of minutes ago, Chris, kind of who's doing it well. I think it's the ones that have really figured out the sequencing. And that largely tends to be some, kind of the larger national players, folks that have operations in multiple states, which means they have to operate between multiple contract terms and with different partners in different states. So they really have, you know, a significant portfolio, you know, in some cases, hundreds of difference of contracts across different states. So I think those are the ones that are really effective in kind of figuring out how they need to sequence it. And they'll look at, you know, as they're negotiating a contract to figure out how does that fit in their longer term strategy 5 years from now from a timing perspective. You know, every hospital system wants to have all the contracts align on the same date. You know, the payers are incentivized not to have it that way. So there's some give and take, you know, as part of the broader negotiation there to see if we can maybe have some impact on that with a specific contract to get it more in line with some of our others. And so that's kind of the way that it needs to play out from a contracting perspective. But I think, you know, ensuring that managed care has a close relationship with your marketing and communications team is essential. You know, I have a client just today that's learning about a potential out-of-network situation in the coming days. From a marketing communications perspective, they were not aware that this was potentially coming, and that ultimately creates some significant reputational risk when we're not prepared to communicate about that if it does in fact go out of network. So, I think, you know, regular touch bases with managed care, building those relationships, understanding what their contractual strategies are and how we can support from a marketing communications perspective to support with Marcom's strategies as well.
So I know that we've talked a little bit about or mostly about, I think, generically around rates for the most part and thinking about that. But would tell us a little bit about some of the other things that are really hot right now that when it comes to negotiations have to be kind of forefront. And also, you know, those things that, you know, as our audience is a lot of marketing and communicators, what that means for how our communicators have to think about the contract impacts, those things that might impact experience or other things of that nature.
I think, you know, I'm sure Amy has some thoughts here. I think the biggest fight right now is, unsurprisingly, around rates. Health systems have been struggling financially over the last several years. They have significant higher supply costs, significantly higher staffing costs. And, you know, most of their contracts are 3, 5, 10-year contracts and aren't able to immediately address those types of inflationary pressures or staffing pressures immediately and provide that and drive that cost on and pass it on like every other industry in our, you know, broader economic environment. However, you know, systems that are coming in asking for, you know, 15-20% raises, percent increases are not going to fly. Ones and twos, that's the name of the game right now. And that's a really challenging environment for our health system clients, because we know that ultimately means a reduction as their costs are going to continue to rise over the next several years over the term of that contract. So I think that's the biggest piece. I certainly see the majority of the large payers continuing to push for more value-based agreements. I think we'll continue to see that. I think it's a conversation from a strategy perspective that the managed care team needs to have with leadership to understand what they're comfortable with from that point, because ultimately that could certainly mean loss of revenue and the challenges that that presents. So they need to be very specific about understanding what those agreements mean. And I think the last piece, it's not necessarily something that comes up in the contract, but something we've seen over the last couple of years, maybe it's something that systems can be thinking more about as they negotiate or renegotiate a contract, is these under and delayed payment problems. These large payers have withheld payments in some cases, 5 years is the most I've seen, but tens and hundreds of millions of dollars being withheld. Blaming it on administrative problems, those types of things, not even necessarily denying it denying payment because of improper billing or anything of those lines. They're just simply withholding the check in a lot of cases. And they're hoping that as part of the next negotiation, they can say, you know, if we're putting up a fight on that, they can weave that in as a potential something that they give to us in exchange for something else that we have to give with them in the contract. So those are some three big trends that I'm seeing. But Amy, I don't know if you have any others to add.
I think you covered it, Ryan. I mean, really, it's particularly scary because those rates aren't even keeping up with inflation. So I think when we're looking at multi-year contracts, the goal that we were talking through about getting ahead of the negotiation is when we can really start to plan better financially. So we can set ourselves up for perhaps a better win over the next 5 years.
So Ryan, you mentioned delayed payments being a challenge and the hope that when negotiation times come up, that can be something that systems put on the table and get some traction with. Are you seeing that happening? Are you seeing success with that in negotiations?
Yeah, I'd actually kind of flip it. I think it's a payer tactic to use it to get something out of it. So if we agree to pay what we actually contractually owed, the payer or the provider is going to have to take a reduction somewhere else. So I'm definitely seeing it there. I think that health systems have been reluctant to litigate in these types of cases. They've waited years to challenge them, thinking that, you know, we'll just do it over our course of business, normal course of business and conversations with our managed care teams, and eventually things will get resolved. But ultimately, this is part of the business strategy. Again, Amy talked about a lot. These guys are, you know, the large for-profit payers are incredibly well-resourced. They're incredibly disciplined. Any inch that we give, they will take. So I think it's just something that we have to be aware of. To put pressure on them before and not wait for it to be a bargaining chip at a negotiating table that we ultimately have to give something up to get back what's rightfully ours.
Yeah. And Amy, you know, you mentioned during the game theory and when Ryan was just talking about, you know, providers waiting years to litigate, just, you know, hoping it could come up next time around, right, in the next contract. That's kind of one of those things they're blinking on, right? What are some of the other ways or places that you see providers feeling pressured to blink? What are those, you know, how is that pressure to blink kind of coming to bear in their worlds?
You know, Ryan hit on one of them as well. I think one key aspect of these negotiations is how the providers manage to negotiate value-based care and bundling. So payers are coming in and trying to negotiate for entire delivery of certain patients, for example, a knee replacement. So they are negotiating one price for a knee replacement from admission, surgery, management, discharge, and beyond. And that similarly can put a provider in a really challenging position if this is a particularly high acuity patient, for example. So that's a place where we can be thoughtful around, is this where we blink, or is this where we hold, or is this where we offer an alternative to ensure that we're creating the most comprehensive strategy that accommodates our negotiation and our practice?
I mean, this is just, I know a little bit obviously about the dynamics in this business because I worked at Revive. I also prior to Revive worked at a payer, but it's just gotten so crazy and so complex. And, you know, from a business point of view, let alone from a marketing and communicators point of view, because these are super tough, tough concepts to even kind of engage, you know, engage the public and some of our key stakeholders on. So I know we've hit on some of these things in different conversations, but you know, what's your advice for marketing and communicators and how to really, you know, we talked about getting in front of pushing the planning, but you know, how do you talk about these, some of these things?
It's a really, really great point, Chris. Consumers don't understand it. Policymakers don't understand healthcare finance. Media barely understand it, even those that are covering it every single day. And that makes it really hard. We have to simplify it for them. You know, the way I always as equate it to is, if you all remember the movie The Big Short, there's a scene in that movie where they're explaining different financial products and they have different acronyms and different things. And Ryan Gosling kind of breaks through the third screen. He's like, "Don't you feel dumb?" And he's like, "That's the point. We want you to feel dumb because we want you to work with a financial advisor so you know what the hell you're supposed to do." It's almost the same thing in healthcare. I mean, there's been studies that have been put out in the last 12 months that the average American doesn't understand what a copay is. So if we're dealing with a consumer audience that doesn't understand what a copay is, how are we going to be able to explain to them the difference between Medicare rates and Medicaid rates or commercial rates? Like, it's just not feasible. So we have to really create an environment where we explain we need to be paid fairly because this is what it means for your care. This is what it means for our community. This is what it means for our staff, who's probably the largest employer in that community. That's the way we have to simplify it. Then you have the very detailed, nuanced conversations with the very select stakeholder groups that understand this. Your employer folks in those contexts, their brokers, policymakers to some extent, media to some extent. But again, it's really difficult. We have to simplify this. We haven't done a good job of talking about these types of things. Go to any hospital or health system billing website and take a look around. The average consumer isn't going to understand what we're talking about there. And so we need to really simplify that message.
Well, I mean, I think that is just an incredible challenge. I think your comment, Amy, about phoning a friend, right? Really kind of, you know, learning from others who've done this well. I know also, you know, putting in a little bit of a plug for our summit where we get together folks from across the industry to kind of talk about, you know, where the landscape is at and learn more about how to tackle some of these challenges. Would you give us a little bit of a plug on that?
Sure thing. So I'll start and maybe Ryan, you can follow. We're really excited for Summit this year. It's the first time we've all been back together since before COVID. And we have a great day and a half or so planned, November 8th through 10th. We're gathering the best in this space. So we're gathering experts from all kinds of different organizations that are highly focused in managed care and delivery. And we're pulling them together to have a number of fabulous sessions and roundtables in which we can prompt a lot of discussion and hopefully learn from each other and see what others are doing across the country. So I think it'll be, you know, an expanded version of how do we address this challenging world we're in and how can we get ahead of it, hearing from, you know, other organizations across the country.
Cool. Well, we're coming close to time. Is there anything else that you guys want to share? Anything else that you think would be helpful as parting thoughts for our listeners?
I just say plan ahead, both on it from a managed care perspective, but also from a longer term reputational piece that we're facing. You got to start now. It's going to take years to pull back. That's my not exactly uplifting closing comment, but something that I think needs to be heard.
I echo that.
All right. Plan ahead. Plan ahead. Plan ahead. All right. So we're going to wrap up another show with that. Thank you so much, Amy and Ryan, for being here. Thanks to all of our listeners for joining in. If there's something you want us to cover, shoot us an email at noanormal@reviveagency.com. Make sure you share the show with your friends and colleagues and give us a review and rating on iTunes. All of that would be appreciated. And until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal. Push that no normal, y'all. Plan ahead. And we'll see y'all next time. 3